So today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 2, verse 17.
Sa bibhrat parusham dama bibhrasam dama brajamano yataravihi durasado tidurdarso bhutanam sambhubhuvaha.
Translation by His Divine Grace and Srila Prabhupada. While carrying the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead within the core of his heart, Vasudeva bore the Lord's transcendentally illuminating effulgence, and thus he became as bright as the sun. He was therefore very difficult to see or approach through sensory perception. Indeed, he was unapproachable and unperceivable even to such formidable men as Kamsa, and not only for Kamsa, but for all living entities. Report by His Divine Grace. The word Dhamma is significant. Dhamma refers to the place where the Supreme Personality of Godhead resides. In the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, first chapter, first verse, it is said, Dhamna Svena Sada Nirashta Kuhakam Satyam Param Timahi. In the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is no influence of material energy. Dhamna Svena Sada Nirashta Kuhakam. Any place where the Supreme Personality of Godhead is present by His name, form, qualities, or paraphernalia immediately becomes a Dhamma. For example, we speak of Vrindavan Dham, Dvarka Dham, Mathura Dham, because in these places, the name, fame, qualities, and paraphernalia of the Supreme Personality are always present. Similarly, if one is empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to do something, the core of his heart becomes a Dhamma. And thus he becomes so extraordinarily powerful that not only his enemies, but also people in general, are astonished to observe his activities. Because he is unapproachable, his enemies are simply struck with wonder, as explained here by the words, Durasado Tidurdarsa. The words Purusham Dhamma have been explained in by various acharyas. Sri Viraragava Acharya says that these words refer to the effulgence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vijayadvaja says that they signify Vishnu Tejas, and Sukadeva says Bhagavat Svarupa. The Vaishnava Tosani says that these words indicate the influence of the Supreme Lord's effulgence. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that they signify the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Well, that's very intense. Any place where the Supreme Personality of Godhead is present by His name, form, qualities, or paraphernalia immediately becomes a Dhamma. Similarly, if one is empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to do something, the core of his heart becomes a Dhamma, and thus he becomes so extraordinarily powerful that not only his enemies, but also people in general are astonished to observe his activities. I find the information and knowledge Prabhupada gives us through this purport almost overwhelming for so many reasons. And I understand from here as well that because of Prabhupada's empowerment by Krishna, Prabhupada's heart is a Dhamma. To dwell on that is very powerful. That also means that this yatra and all of the temples obviously are Dhammas, but so do the homes of all the Vaishnavas that chant Hare Krishna. In fact, anybody's home where they chant Hare Krishna becomes a Dhamma. So many of us drive vehicles and we chant in those vehicles, they also become Dhammas. We go on Sankirtan, Harinam, we chant the holy names on the streets, on the sidewalks, they become Dhammas. The yellow dutta that Prabhupada crossed the ocean with is a Dhamma. Anywhere on the planet where Krishna's name is chanted in so many ways becomes a Dhamma, because Krishna's name, which is non-different from him, becomes purified. So it's easy in some ways to see how this whole planet will soon become a Dhamma, a place where Krishna is glorified, where Krishna's name is chanted on millions upon millions of lips. Tongues become a resting place for the Supreme Lord. When each one of us chants Krishna's holy name, our hearts become converted to Dhammas. I would even dare say that it becomes a self-evident truth. And Prabhupada also describes here how great personalities and even ordinary people become amazed at such a personality. And we can see that from Prabhupada's activities. When he was traveling, everywhere he went, people were drawn to him, whether in a friendly frame or not, they were still drawn to him. And as a result of that, each one of us were drawn to him as well. Because he is unapproachable, his enemies are simply struck with wonder. So Prabhupada had many enemies as well as followers, disciples, people who were trying to upset the mission from Lord Chaitanya that was in his heart to propagate Hare Krishna. You are leaving, Prabhu? Safe travels, Hare Krishna. The potency that Prabhupada exhibited is unmatched. His godbrothers expressed that very nicely when they saw just how potent and empowered he was by Lord Chaitanya to spread the Sankirtan movement all over the planet in 10 years. In Toronto, where we get many new visitors, sometimes full classes of college and university students come in for one reason or another, whether it's part of their curriculum or they just wanted to come and visit, and then they all come as a group, and I'll point out to them all the books that Prabhupada not only translated from Sanskrit to English, but also provided word-for-word translation, and a purport. And that he did this in 10 years. many of them exclaim that they find this almost hard to believe, and especially at Prabhupada's advanced age. And they want to immediately inquire more. They want to find out more. What did he do? What did he say? How did he say it? How did he do it? Where does this potency of his come from? And Prabhupada had an answer to that. Many disciples asked Prabhupada, how did you know what words to say here in the purports? And Prabhupada had a very simple answer. Krishna told me. Now how more transcendental and potent can that be? Krishna told him what words to say and how to say them, how to present them. And that's what Prabhupada gave us. So there, this indicates to me and to so many others that Prabhupada was not just an ordinary man. He was not just a personality traveling the world. He was an especially empowered personality. Thus he was called Shaktavesh Avatar, a particularly empowered personality that was sent by Lord Chaitanya as one of his associates to bring us the most merciful benedictions. He brought us Lord Krishna and love of Krishna. It is said that Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda broke into the storehouse of love of God. And Prabhupada took that love of God and then distributed it indiscriminately all over the planet through that special empowerment from Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. It may sound like, you know, some nice words. Well, this is very nice sounding. It's very poetic. When we say things like that, but when we begin to understand just how profound that is, that Srila Prabhupada brought something very special to the Western world, something that even his godbrothers had been unable to do. Some of them had gone to Europe and England, and they found that these meat eaters were unapproachable. You just couldn't do that. So they came back empty-handed. And Prabhupada decided that he was going to go and follow his spiritual master's mission. And he brought to the meat eaters, to those lost souls in the Western world, the supreme benediction, the most magnificent blessings of Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya. And whether we wanted it or not, he just gave it to us. Some kicking and screaming received that benediction, and it changed their hearts. Meat eaters' hearts are usually very hard. And yet, the words emanating from Srila Prabhupada's mouth reached into those hearts and started to soften them and open them up so that more and more could reach deeper and deeper into the hearts. And that very, very special love potion of transcendental ecstasy for Krishna reached in and started to transform the stone hearts into very soft hearts. Hearts that can also give back to others to continue the process. And that is very, very special. So each one of us are therefore empowered by Srila Prabhupada to continue his mission, which was Lord Chaitanya's mission. So everyone we see, everyone we talk to, everyone we encounter can receive that benediction just as we received it. We all know what it feels like when we look at the deities, when we listen to Prabhupada's words, and we become touched when tears well up in our eyes. And I know from experience that I'm not the only one that experiences that. I've seen it on so many devotees' faces and eyes, that their hearts are overflowing with that. And it may just be a drop or two at this point, but still it causes it to well up into the hearts and it comes out in the eyes. And we become completely enamored with Lord Krishna, with the devotees, with Srila Prabhupada, and we want to, it makes us want to go out there and distribute it, following in Srila Prabhupada's footsteps and following in the parampara. So we give this very nice mercy that Prabhupada gave us. So that's due to this special empowerment. And I don't know how many times I've heard devotees describe that when they would look at Prabhupada, they were transfixed by his glow, by his effulgence, which was the Supreme Lord in his heart, just shining through. In the Toronto Temple, Prabhupada's Vyasasan, it would be situated over here. And when people come in, they don't necessarily see it right away because they're immediately drawn to the deities and the altars that are here. And many, many times we've heard people tell us, sometimes they're there for the very first time and they have darshan with the deities and they turn around and they're taken aback. There's a person sitting there and they're convinced he's alive. And they don't know that he is, and they go and see closer and say, oh, it's a Murti. But for a moment, Prabhupada's potency reached into their hearts, and they were transcendentally transfixed for that moment, even if it's just that quickly. But they got a little taste. And so their world is transformed, and the process begins. However infinitesimally small it is, it's still there. It may take them 5 minutes, 5 days, 5 years, five lifetimes. But still, Krishna, through Srila Prabhupada, draws them. And that's the bait. And they bite. So it's, in some ways, the most transcendental fishing story ever told. Because of its power. And we know from Shastra. And we have the knowledge, we anticipate that for the next 10,000 years, this is going to continue increasing. It's just going to get more and more intense. And Prabhupada is going to get more and more of them. So that's extremely powerful. Nothing like this has ever been done. It's unprecedented. So just from the presence of Krishna is Prabhupada's heart. This is all happening. Just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur from his balcony had a vision looking at Lord Chaitanya's birthplace. What did Bhaktivinoda Thakur see? Yeah. And the only thing separating the manifestation of that vision is time. And it's now that time is accelerating in some way because the temple in the Vedic planetarium is being built. It's starting to manifest layer by layer, brick by brick. It's becoming real in our terms. And similarly, that vision that all the acharyas have had from Lord Chaitanya on, and that Prabhupada has explained and talked to us so many times over, is already also starting to manifest through Prabhupada's potency. So powerful is this great acharya that his descriptions of the visions he's had for the next 10,000 years is beginning to manifest one temple at a time, one devotee at a time, one heart at a time, and it's going to be manifested. It is unavoidable. It is a fact. It's just happening at its own pace. Time manifested. I find this in good old English vernacular, mind-blowing. This is occurring right before our eyes. And we're on the very cutting edge of Kali Yuga. We aren't even fully in it yet. We're only 5,000 years into it. So this portends very, very well for the next 10,000 years. This is not just good news. This is fantastic news that all these souls can experience Srila Prabhupada's potency and his love for the individual living entities. So it's great news indeed. And we should always be rejoicing in this news. I've been to a few different temples, and even in Toronto, I've seen so many devotees, you know, they're down in the dumps because this is not going their way and that's not happening for them. They're very depressed. What's there to be depressed about? Srila Prabhupada's potency is transforming the whole world. What kind of greater news than that can you have? But that's what happens when we kind of, you know, put on blinders and just, you know, obliterate the great stuff that's happening all around us, and we just become focused on what our little, you know, self-important egos are trying to convince us is important. You know, it's more important that we have some dissatisfaction and some mental platforms full of situations like this. And forget about this Srila Prabhupada stuff, you know. It's not as important as your little moment of depression. And not to negate that it's important to deal with these issues, but look beyond your own personal boundaries and see that there's is the rising of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda on this moon. It's affecting the whole world. It's the best viral infection you can have, because it changes the heart from dark and filled with soot into a diamond. The coal is being transformed. It's the best touchstone there is, Prabhupada's words, the most magnificent and powerful touchstone in the world, in the whole universe, because it transforms the coal in the heart into diamonds so that the devotees can shine that potency, and we can continue Srila Prabhupada's mission, even in the smallest possible way, whether it's scrubbing a pot in the kitchen, cleaning the bathroom, wiping the floor in the temple room, worshipping the deities, leading kirtan, whatever it is. There is no difference from the services to Krishna and Srila Prabhupada in that way. And how many times do we hear, well, I'm not going to wash the bathrooms because that's so, you know, it's beneath me. I'm so much more elevated. I should be worshiping the deities and giving class all the time. And yet something happens where that's not happening. And the devotee is repeatedly asked to wash pots, clean the bathroom. What is Krishna trying to say here? Is the washroom or the pots in the kitchen different? Is that service different? Is it less elevated than worship, offering darshan and worshiping the deities? Pujari work, is that more important? No, not at all. In fact, there's a young man that comes in every week. In Toronto, every Tuesday he comes in, and the most menial task, scrubbing the bathroom floor, scrubbing the shower stalls so that all the dirt is washed away, he knows it purifies him, and he gets totally blissed out from it. In fact, I've often seen him cry, tears flowing from his eyes, because he's doing something to serve Srila Prabhupada in a most menial way. And that satisfies him, it fulfills him, not only to the brim, but overflowing. And he makes no argument, he never hesitates. Ask him to do anything and he'll do it. And when he dances in front of the deities in kirtan, there are tears streaming down his eyes. Because he feels that love deep inside here. And all of us should feel that. When I first saw Srila Prabhupada in 1971 in New York, we took a van from Montreal. I was staying in a Montreal temple. And we all rushed down to the airport, John F. Kennedy Airport, to greet him there. And then we went back in the van and rushed back to the temple so we could all greet him again. And afterwards, everyone went into the temple room. And in that temple, the Vyasa-san was across from the deities, and we were having this massive kirtan. I was surprised that the whole entire building didn't come down on us. And there was barely any room in there for a sardine. And I happened to be right across from Srila Prabhupada, like half the distance between yourself and myself. And for some unknown reason, all of a sudden this space was created. And there was no one between Srila Prabhupada and myself. And he was playing kartals. And he opened his eyes to look at the deities that were behind me. And these tears just started flooding his face and coming down. And he closed his eyes again, continued playing kartals. And it was the most magnificent moment. This was in 1971. And yet that memory is etched in my brain. Even as I'm retelling this, I feel tears well up just behind my eyes, as if it happened 5 minutes ago. And I'm sure anyone who's ever met Srila Prabhupada, the devotees and some that are not necessarily devotees in this lifetime, have memories that are burnt into their brain in a very similar way. And it could have been an insignificant thing, apparently insignificant. Maybe they were in a hallway and Prabhupada just happened to cross by and, you know, he glanced at them through this corner of his eyes, and that event is etched into the mind and the heart, probably forever. So Srila Prabhupada's potency is such that it's unfathomable to our small, materially conditioned minds. And so I just wanted to share these things with you, and thank you very, very much for your consideration. I don't know if there's any comments or questions. I don't know how qualified I am to even answer questions, but comments are most welcome.
Thank you very much for sharing with us. It was wonderful to hear you speaking. I wanted to also share, there was a very famous sannyasi of the Madhavacharya Sampradaya who came to Vrindavan in India. And during he was asked to speak about Srila Prabhupada on Prabhupada's appearance day. And he said that in his estimation, Srila Prabhupada was even greater than Lord Shiva. And he said because Lord Shiva was able to control the Ganges River, and by doing so, the Ganges flowed across India and people became purified by that. He said, but Prabhupada was able to bring down the ocean of love of God and inundate the entire world. He said, so Srila Prabhupada, in his estimation, was greater than even Lord Shiva.
That's very nice. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Thank you so very much. Oh, please. Sorry. Go ahead. Please. I didn't notice.
Yeah, you have spoken about the devotees who are depressed and in their own little world. My question is, how do we deal with them?
I'm sorry.
What is our duty? How can we deal with them? How can we bring them back to Prabhupada's potency?
I observed that they always kept to themselves. And then they would say that no one spends time with them. And I'm like, what? I didn't say that, but in my mind, it's like, what? If you lock yourself in your room and you don't allow anyone to knock on your door, visit you, or spend time with you, if when you come and take prasadam, you take your plate and you go to your room, or you sit in the corner and you turn your back to everyone, how can anyone feel invited to share anything with you? So my background is a certified hypnotherapist, life coach, and NLP practitioner. So I would just, for the first few weeks, I would just observe them and watch their behavior. And see, I remember, because there was a period of time I had left ISKCON, came back. And in what we'll just call the old days, when somebody new came to through the door, devotees would almost, you know, trip over each other to get to that person and bring them some prasadam and share some nectar with them, you know, introduce them to Krishna consciousness, even in a small way. So when I started coming to Toronto Temple a few years ago, one thing I did find very strange is people were like, and it would go to the other side of the room, what is this? You know, and nobody would approach me. And I said, okay, that's the game we play. I can play too. So after observing various devotees for a couple of weeks, I started going to one and Hare Krishna Prabhu, you know, slowly befriend them. I noticed maybe their socks were torn or full of holes. So I'd bring this one some socks, or this one some thermal underwear, or this one some t-shirts and things like that. And just to befriend them and create a nice rapport with them and talk to them a little bit in a way that would prompt them to, you know, converse with me. And then they would start opening up. And I was ready for, you know, the floodgates opening up and all this stuff come out. And slowly see that when I would come in, they would not only, you know, greet me, but they'd start embracing me, you know, hugs and everything like that, which is what I wanted. And I love hugs. And I'll give them freely and I'll seek them out. If somebody is, you know, not into that, that's fine. That's not a problem. But as the minute I see a slightest inclination towards that, you're done. That's it. And so I noticed that they were willing to do that. Sometimes it's not necessarily a hug, but just, you know, a nice hand on the shoulder, how are you, Prabhu, today, and stuff. And so they'd start opening up, and then we'd start sharing prasadam and to talking. And I discovered that, you know, these were magnificent individuals, but very few people had taken the time to listen to some of their concerns. So no one listened to them, so didn't want to talk to anybody else. So they just closed the doors and their hearts were closed. And I'm not saying I performed any kind of miracle cures here. That's not my intention. What I'm just expressing is that by paying attention, not necessarily, you know, we let them talk for 2 minutes and then flood them for an hour with all sorts of gibberish. Not at all. In fact, I don't like that kind of stuff. Listen, if you don't even have to say anything, and you'll be amazed if you just listen and the response you get. And they feel listened to. So it starts a healing process. It creates a bridge. And I have no hesitation to going to any of them now. I'll ask them to do one thing or another. And there's no resistance. There was in the past, now there isn't. And they look for now other devotees to talk to share with. And we go upstairs to the dining hall to have lunch prasadam, and sometimes you can't shut any of us up. You know, we're laughing and having a good time. And if somebody was there a couple of years ago and left and then came back and saw what's going on in the dining hall with these devotees, they would swear, you know, it was like some new planet or something like that. It's not the same place, you know. And all it needed was somebody to listen to them, which creates a nice atmosphere. They feel respected. And if there are any significant issues, and we start addressing them as well, you know, situations happen. I mean, Prabhupada explained that being human means you'll have an opinion. But if your opinion is not about Krishna, there's not much worth to it. So the idea is to change their opinions and the opinions of others to all be about Krishna. Not necessarily have their heads filled with conspiracy theories and this and that, and so many things that have nothing to do with Krishna. In my mind, the only conspiracy theory worth its weight is that Prabhupada's potency is going to take over the world for 10,000 years. And that's an and it's not a conspiracy, and it's not a theory, because it's happening. Even if it's happening, you know, one country at a time, so many temples are opening up here, there, and everywhere. it's happening. So I would rather fill my heart and mind with those kinds of discussions. So we are working on these things, and it's had a very nice impact. I've had several devotees from different places come into the temple now and say, oh, it feels different in here. What's going on? You know, sometimes I just smile and have some prasadam prabhu. Yeah. So I hope that answers your question. Thank you. Anything else? Okay, then, Jai, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.